We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Major League Baseball just announced some sweeping rules changes for 2023. Is your league doing the same? One of ours is. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about some of the new rule changes as well in baseball. That and more with Tim McLeod and Todd Zoll on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Jeff Erickson here with Tim McLeod and Todd Zola. Guys, you first of all, thank you for jumping in on relatively short notice. Not even relatively, just short notice, period, to do a Fantasy Baseball Podcast with me today. It's good to talk baseball when I've got like 7 billion football things to do. It's like I still want to talk baseball, especially in September. Good stuff here. So thanks for jumping on. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm doing absolutely great, Jeff, and it's my pleasure to join you today. I don't play any fantasy football. I'm baseball 365, nice. 24/7. So, you know, this game you talk about, this football, is a very foreign one to me. I'm still working with three downs here, so it's nice to talk some baseball.
Yeah, you got Canadian where you got like the Rouge and the like the 55-yard line and all that other stuff. So,
oh yeah, constant motion.
Yeah, you got a decided advantage right now this time of year that you get to focus on your prep, look at those prospects, get your rankings up, and I like that there. It's all good.
Yes.
Todd, I know you got two star starters coming tomorrow, and you are you know, always thinking baseball there, but appreciate you jumping on as well. How are your teams doing down the stretch run here?
Well, my football are all 0-1, so I'm mathematical. Oh, wait, baseball. I wish it were a better season, and you know, to be honest, I think we all I always say that. I have an idea for a series of pieces in the offseason to address it, but doing all right in a couple places. The public leagues, not so much. Tout Wars and Labor, XFL. So you know, we'll see what we can do. As usual, my best leagues, you know, my overall competitions are free. That I'm doing well in, and not like the high stakes ones. So
we're all together in XFL. John Drucker, you know, he's going to go out on top. It looks like he's going to retire at the end of this year. He's like, I think our most crowned champ in the XFL. And I thought I had my chance to knock him off this year. I mortgage not just next year's future, but like the future's future. And some days I'm second, some days I'm fourth. And you guys are right. Pretty close right there as well. Frustrating. I can't quite get over the top in this league. I never have won this league, and I just and it's a hybrid dynasty slash keeper league. There's elements of both, and that's the whole fun about this league. Is it is a unique type of league.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Todd. Sorry.
Okay. Well, no need to apologize.
I'm Canadian. It's a rule.
I was going to say, Jeff, I mean, you haven't won, Jeff, but you entered a league a couple years after we started, right?
Yeah, a few years after.
I've been in since day one, and I haven't taken this league down yet. So I'm, you know, just as frustrated. I don't, but, you know, at least you get a shot. I mean, it's solace. The number one draft pick with the second place finisher gets the top overall pick.
Trust me, I don't have a pick. I've traded all those bad boys.
Then there's the fact that you, 2027 is your next pick, I think.
But it is
an interesting dynamic. You know, you mentioned keeper dynasty hybrid. That's going to be important as we start to talk about some of the rule agendas that we're talking about on email.
Well, you guys definitely are making me feel much better because this is only my fifth year and I haven't won either, but it does beg the fact that, you know, hey, by the time I'm in this league 20 years, hopefully I will have a victory or two. It's a tough league. It's a good group. And I really like the format and the rules a lot. I really do.
Well, let's talk about that format. First of all, it's not quite your standard 5x5 league. We use OBP instead of batting average. Pretty big detail there. Same thing as in Tout Wars. But the thing that makes it special is the roster construction. You know, the way we acquire players. We have 15 keepers. They can be major leaguers or prospects, both, but 15 total. We have a October/November auction. This year will be back to November. And then we'll have a March supplemental draft to fill in those rosters afterward there. And that March draft is insanely important. You know, we have a salary element, but players automatically advance either $5 or $3. You don't have to assign any long-term deals. That's one thing different than keeper leagues, which means they never expire. But at the same time, you have to make that decision every single year, and you have that tension.
Mike Trout has never seen the auction.
No.
Right?
No, he hasn't.
Has Freddie Freeman?
No. No, because I drafted him and traded him. And okay. I did Trout, too. Trout as well. The two players that you mentioned, I traded years ago.
You're welcome, Todd.
Every year that I set out, you know, do the SWAT work, I get to see where my minor leaguers are on every other roster. No, but you mentioned, Jeff, the five or the three. The three has to do with farm players. And there is the acceleration. But so the keeper element is salaries eventually get prohibitive enough that they're thrown back in. But as we mentioned with Trout and several others, they haven't seen the auction yet. And in an OBP league, Trout may never. So that's the dynasty aspect of it.
Right.
So, you know, Tim, you can speak a little more to this because you're kind of a dynasty guru. But I think in true keeper, in the keeper leagues, you know, you compete one year, you rebuild the next. You compete, rebuild. That's kind of an hyperbole, but you know, let's use that as the extreme. And then in dynasty leagues, man, you're only going to trade a top prospect if you get a notarized sheet that you're going to win the league.
Yeah, you know? pretty much, Todd. Yeah, that's it.
You do not trade your top. So in between here, there are top prospects being traded, maybe not as the frequency of a keeper league, but we get a little bit, and that's what I like too. When we first started the league, I kind of didn't like the fact that it was a hybrid. Now I love it.
Yeah. Well, I'm witness to trading away prospects. In the last 3 years, I've traded away Adley Rutschman. I've traded away Andrew Vaughn. This year, I've traded a slew of players, prospects. The thing is, you get to restock prospects. I like doing that. You can take anybody. You can take, you know, if Mike Trout has a baby, I can draft that baby next year if I want to. The Mike Trout baby, I just have to keep him for 18 to 20 years, hopefully, and then he becomes...
Oh, Jeff, we're now going to have a rule discussion whether you can draft unborn children.
No, it has to be born.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's...
You can't just draft Mike Trout baby. You actually have to have a name.
Oh, exactly. It can't be while still in the womb, right?
It's going to have to go to a vote, and I'm afraid that it's going to be close.
Yeah, well, we have many rule changes suggested every single year. So that's a perfect segue into what we got gathered here, because we have rule change discussions every year in XFL. It's a very vibrant league. One might argue it's over-codified. I think it might be. I hate constitutional bloat, but at the same time, you know, situations come up. We have to address it there. And this year it's been different. It's more like not introducing new rules and more a case of changing existing ones. I thought there are some very interesting ones being proposed this year.
Yeah, it's I see four of them as being fine tuning. Mm-hmm. But one does carry a little bit of significance and weight, and that's the increase in the farm players and the doubling up on the innings pitched and at bats. That one could be fairly significant, I believe, in the big scheme of things, based sure. on the, you know, the way the league is structured and the existing rules.
Right. And we saw that. And we saw a good Twitter discussion you and Doug Dennis were having about that. It is a big deal because, you know, the question is when, like, you get a prospect that gets called up in September, or when you pick up a prospect in the supplemental drafts every single month that we have. We don't have weekly pickups. We have monthly pickups, too. That's another thing that's a little bit of a different wrinkle. You know, getting that guy that qualifies as a plus three guy is huge. You know, it's really huge.
Well, I picked up Logan Gilbert and Tristan McKenzie at the same time.
Yep.
The timing of it means McKenzie next year is 14 and Gilbert is 7.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big difference.
In 3 years. And just, yeah. And then yeah. in 2 years from now, you're going to have a really tough decision on, you know, well, maybe even next year, really tough decision on whether to keep McKenzie as one of your 15 guys that you can keep.
Exactly. And it's all about the timing. But the increase in the innings pitched at bat component should make keeping the farm players, I think it should boost them up a little bit. But at the same time, you know, if too many people are building for the future, that also creates opportunities for those that are playing for now.
Right. So to clarify, currently anything fewer than 50 at bats or 20 innings pitched qualifies you to be a farm plus three contract.
In right. our proposal, if you pick them up at that right. time.
Yeah. Right. It can be done in March and it can be done in the six supplementals. And if there's anybody that snuck through, because we picked the supplementals pretty clean, but if there's anybody that sneaks through, you can purchase a player in the auction under those limits and he's a plus three player. Now, the proposal is to make those limits 140. 100 at bats. Don't ask me why we use at bats in an OBP league. We just do. I don't want to put this. It's not, you know, let's worry about that rule next year. And then 40 innings pitched. And one of the repercussions, I've felt it a couple years ago, Doug Dennis is feeling it this year, is some of your minor leaguers. It was Gavin Lux a couple years ago. You know, I think Gavin Lux will eventually develop into an everyday player. If it takes 3 years, that'll be a $10 contract. I'm willing to wait. I was hoping he didn't have his contract automatically be accelerated because he passed a certain threshold. He did. So I had to decide to keep him on my active auction roster, knowing I wasn't going to play him this year.
Right. So to give that a this year equivalent, Josh Jung just got the call up.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is he going to get 100 plate appearances or 100 at bats? Probably not. No. And so if you think he's not going to, you don't activate him this year. So you can keep him next year. But if you activate him, then you have to keep, then automatically he goes up to being $3 or $4 next year as opposed to the keep for free guy next year.
And you lose the opportunity cost of being able to pick up another corner infielder.
Yeah.
He locks, you know, you know, whoever it may have been, if you're not going to play Young, you can get a guy in the March reserve, 17 man reserve draft. But the point being, you're probably passing up on a guy that you'd spend a buck on and cross your fingers he's available in March.
Right.
Yeah, it definitely creates certain challenges. Hey, maybe what we should look at is adding three or four reserve spots to the November auction.
No, I'm against that.
Tossing ideas out there.
Well, what the thing is, I think you make that decision. I think whether you're contending now and you want to have guys that are contributing that particular year or you're stashing prospects, it's still, you have 15 players. Right. If you allow the extra reserve spots, all of a sudden you get to keep, you know, it's easier to speculate and stash prospects and you get to be cheaper too. I think it would benefit the teams that are rebuilding to do right. that. I've been on that side of the coin for for many, many years, as a matter of fact. And I've had to make those hard decisions. Okay, do I keep this major leaguer who's going to be pretty good? You know, he's going to definitely be a profit at this price, but it's going to cost me a free prospect. You know, it's not free. It costs a spot. The spot has value.
I think the reserve is going to stay in March just because we see spring training. We know who's playing and who's not playing at that point. But, yeah, but Jaran Duran was a guy I had to make a decision on a couple of years ago. Now I'm regretting that decision. I don't, you know, he has not worked out. I'm still up in the air with Lux. And I think Tanner Houck was another guy. Doug has a couple of guys this year who he's going to have to make that decision on. I think it's a great thing. What we haven't talked about, and this should be talked about with all rules, is maybe I need to go back and read the thread, but this 100 inning and 40 inning, will that go into effect for the March? You know, when did we start? When does that start going into effect? Because we played this year thinking 50-20, making decisions based on 50-20.
Right.
So I think we should set our auction keepers based on 50-20 and then decide when we start going 140.
Right. So it implies totally in-season play in 2023 or the auction in 2024, one of the two. Not auction this fall auction for the upcoming season. I tend to agree with that.
Yeah, totally agree.
All rules, we need to, when you decide in your rules, I'm not saying everybody knows this. You need to ask yourself, if we change this rule, would the previous year's gameplay have been affected? And if the answer is yes, you have to delay changing the rule, unless it's unanimous to change it.
Yeah. I don't think any of them were unanimous.
No.
The odds of that happening are, you know, both the same as winning Powerball, right?
Exactly. We'll talk about some more of the proposed rule changes in a second, but first, a quick note from our sponsors on the Blue Wire Network.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
All of RotoWire's podcasts are on the Blue Wire Network. We thank them for that. I'm here with Todd Zola and Tim McLeod. Tim, where can people find your work?
You can find me at Prospect 361, Patton and Company, and on the Baseball 365 Facebook page. I'm usually at one of the three, hanging out, answering questions, posting stuff. That's home sweet homes.
Now, I've always wanted to ask, why 361? Was 365 taken, or you wanted 4 days off, or what's the significance of 365?
Come on, you got to have at least four stat holidays in a year, okay? Yeah. Even us hardworking baseball guys got to have a few days off, right?
Canadian year? I don't know.
That's it. Metric system. Metric, yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Okay. So one of the other rule changes that was proposed that did not pass was changing our in-season salary cap from 300 to 325. I voted against this, even though I'm a contending team. This was 2 weeks ago, it was the first time, and I made multiple trades, go for it trades. It took me a really long time to bump up against that cap. One of the reasons is we have a rule in our trades that you have to include player for player, pick for pick. So, you know, say if you trade three players, you have to trade away three players. Some of that balances the salary. Sometimes in the negotiations, like, okay, I'll offload this salary as part of it here. But it took me a really long time for 300 to even become a factor. So I figure I don't need that much other buffer room. Other people probably shouldn't need it either.
I think that makes total sense. And at one point in time, weren't acquired players at a $10 base in this league, and it was dropped subsequently to $5? I think that was before my time.
And subsequently to one. Yeah. After that, too. As we discussed in the thread, right, Todd?
Yeah, well, that's what the $10 was so long ago that I barely remember it. But when it's been five for a lot of years. And there were teams, because, I mean, one of the things I needed to do as SWAT was just to make sure the site tells you. You just have to make sure, you know, go to the section of the site that says anybody over, just to make sure everybody's underneath the 325 at the time limit. And our, you know, rest in peace, Steve Moyer, for a couple years when he was competing, he purposely traded for players that put him over the cap, and he used matchups for the better $30 player. Some people are shy about trading away. Oh, I can't use him because of the cap. Steve said, "The heck with it." And he would literally just, you know, play the matching game with his $30 and $40 players.
What, seven games versus five, et cetera, et cetera.
Whatever one would normally do.
You could be like me and trade for Frankie Montas and see him turn to dust and just bench him anyhow.
There you go. But no, so the point being, we naturally or organically lowered the cap a couple years ago when we went from $5 to one. Think about how many free agents you have in a 15-team lineup, you know, in your NFBC, whatever league. That's $4 that would have been on the cap previously. So I don't like Jeff, I don't think it was necessary. I mean, we could probably drop it to 290 and it wouldn't have affected gameplay. I mean, it was very, very rare someone came close to 300.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody did not make a trade, or I don't want to say, I don't know for sure. I don't know that there were that many trades that were, you know what? I can't do that because of the cap. I say that all the time in another league because it's a completely different format. But this league, I don't, you know, it's like if I had forgotten the check, I wasn't going to make any mistakes because no one was even close.
Well, yeah, I've got 17 of my 40 players right now are dollar players.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think most teams are in a like situation with their reserves filled with $1 to $5 players.
I mean, in general, I like, of all the ways to police dump trading, futures trading, I like the cap. Then it's just a matter of massaging all the, you know, the salaries and the accelerations to make it work the way the league wants to.
Absolutely.
So, you can't, in the olden days, you got an asterisk player of a certain salary, or, you know, you couldn't trade you have to be equal for equal asterisk players. That's all artificial. If you're under the cap, the trade's good.
Yeah. I mean, what the RotoWire Staff Keeper League, we have an active cap and we have, we have a total roster cap where it's at 360. It's not an active one like XFL.
Right.
So if you're over, you're over, period. You can set your lineup however you want, but you have to stay under. But it's such a permissive cap. It's like 360. Right. However, the inflation at the auction is way steeper there than it is in XFL. And that's because we have long-term contracts. You don't get the $3 acceleration, but you do get, you know, okay, I'm locked in for 4 years in Mike Trout. That's done, period. And you have a lot of these guys locked in. And so it's a little bit different, in terms of the in auction inflation dynamics, and Viva la difference. I love that there's differences there.
There are a handful of players in the XFL that, you know, just go through the roof, but it settles very quickly. Whereas in the RotoWire staff league, you know, it's, you know, the last player drafted goes for $10, you know?
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah, there's not a lot of $1 catchers left, is there?
Well, in our league, one of the dynamics is the catcher inflation has always been, at this point, it's just funny. I don't get frustrated. I just laugh at what the catchers are going for. That's just the way it's worked in the XFL. Now, you guys know prospects a little. We got some nice catchers coming up. I'm curious to see what happens. And, you know, are those going to be priority in the March draft? Because there are a nice little group of catchers and some that emerge this season too.
Catcher inflation and closer deflation.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I know I'm still laughing about what I paid for Yasmani Grandel last year, guys.
Which was?
21, I believe.
Yeah. That's reasonable. I mean, that's it not even inflated.
No, reasonable.
In the league, we've had, you know, Yadier Molina go for 27. I mean, that's just the way it is. Primarily because there aren't that many catchers being kept because they're not worth it. And we got the money. You got to spend it somewhere. Well, I'll get myself a couple of good catchers.
Yeah, $4 a home run works out well.
Anyway.
Yeah, you know, but there have been years where I, you know, the thing is, I pay up for Real Muto and then trade him when I'm not going to win that year. Yeah. But it makes me wonder, though, is that exploitable? I mean, is our tendency exploited? Do we overvalue that and undervalue closers? I don't know. It's interesting. Or maybe I'm wrong in that respect. I should just look at Don's roster and that get the answer there. That's probably the best way of going about it there.
Yes.
Well, Don does. I mean, I don't think he may or may not say this. He just treats this as the dynasty element is secondary to him.
Very much so. Yeah.
He can't. I mean, he's got some prospects, but when we're doing mainly because he's always competing. But when we do our March draft, we don't separate farm from major league players. So you have to figure out when to draft your, you know, I need a corner infielder, but I also want to build up my farm. You have to decide when you want to, you know, that pick, especially early on. This corner is really good, but man, this is the last good farm guy on the board, and I don't have another pick until blah, 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 blah.
Do I want Dylan Cruz or do I want somebody who's going to accumulate 400 to 500 at bats?
Yeah.
And I think we're starting to get a little bit of an answer there as to what can be very successful in this format. Yeah.
Well, Don's always gone major leaguer early on.
But then Doug Dennis has built up some super teams over the years, and he went the opposite route.
Yeah, exactly.
And piled on the prospects and got all these shortstops to go, you know, hit at once. Now, he had Tatis, and that kind of screwed him this year. You lose him and get 0.0 at-bats for the season. That tends to stink.
Things that worked for Doug as well was at the time he was rebuilding, I believe he was the only team taking that path. And it's
the extreme. You took it to the extreme.
Yeah. It's much easier to make that work when you don't have five teams doing it at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Like any other strategy.
Dynamics very quickly.
Doug definitely opened up the pathway to take prospects earlier. Yeah. We all would do it. But he, you know, when he was taking them in the first four picks and trading into the second round to make those picks, if you wanted a prospect, you needed to draft one early or else Doug was going to get them all. Yeah. Well, he was already getting most of them. So he kind of changed the dynamic of it.
That's one of the things that I like about this league is that there are many paths you can take and they can all be very successful.
Indeed. I love it. 15-team league. It's perfect for this.
Yep, I agree.
So we have Major League Baseball with some rule changes. I want to discuss those. But first, a quick note from our sponsor, our good friends over at Sorare. Sorare MLB is an NFT-based, free-to-play baseball game played with officially licensed Major League Baseball cards. Sign up today at Sorare.com/MLB, and you'll receive 13 common cards to start your collection. Build 7-player lineups from cards in your collection and play weekly competitions with scoring based on real-life player performance. Compete for rewards with other fans around the world. For more information on gameplay and to sign up, visit Sorare.com/MLB. There's no better time to join Sorare than ahead of our postseason gameplay. Todd, I know you actually just wrote an article that you're diving into that right now.
Yeah, for a moment, I was like, what am I getting into here? Then I did a little bit more research. I've always wanted to dabble, and I don't do any of these sort of things. So, I wrote a piece on the site that's up for those that are interested in joining. And it's going to be fun. Yeah, I got Corbin Burns. I got to choose him, and they gave me 12 more guys. And what, there's only 2.5 weeks left, so there's not much that can be done now. But the stuff carries over.
Nice.
And you can purchase more players. I mean, you can get, I mean, I'm talking 52 cents and 87 cents, so it's not like you're going to go broke. We will see, I'm going to document my journey on site.
Very good. Very good. We're looking forward to that. Major League Baseball, like XFL, is changing their rules. And they're trying to maybe get away from the three true outcomes game. At least that's the goal, I think, trying to eliminate the shift, the extreme shift, at least trying to increase stolen bases by allowing only two free pickoff throws or disruptions, I believe it's called. Step off the mound is also a disruption. And then that third one, you either got to get him out or he gets second base. It's kind of like a challenge. I mean, it's worse. Going to be interesting to see how that happens. Tim, how are you going to adjust your strategy next year with the new rule changes?
I'm really not. I think when you look at the shift, basically what they said is you've got to have two players on either side of second. It doesn't say where those two players might have to be.
Okay.
They're not limiting outfielders from playing in. So, you got your third baseman playing shortstop. You got your shortstop a foot away from second base. Second base, he slides over. I really think that this could be a precursor to a situation where at some point in time we might see permanent firm blocks. Third base has to play between here and here. Shortstop between here, much more defined than it is now. I think we'll have to wait and see if this accomplishes what Rob Manfred wants it to accomplish. But right now, I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. I really don't.
Todd, what say you?
I just want to clarify. So when Rowan Gartner throws the ball up and calls the runner chicken, is that a disruption?
Only if an umpire sees it and odds are 50-50.
Yeah. All right. I think the shift is going to make a little bit more of an impact than what Tim is suggesting, but I don't know that we're going to just have to redo our projection system. I think that there are going to be certain players that benefit, and we may not know right away because noise is going to overshadow a few extra hits either way. So it's going to take a while for that to flesh out. But I'm always of the belief, I mean, even though projections are estimates, et cetera, I'm always of the belief that if you can fine tune your estimate, you should do it. So I will probably make some adjustments in my numbers. And over the course of the off season, I expect we're going to see a lot smarter than me write pieces about specific players and specific pitchers. And I will, as the drafter, I will then have to decide if I'm going to incorporate that information, but I think it'll change. I think that one of the things it can do, and this goes hand in hand with the bases being a little bigger, I think we're going to see more athleticism at some of the positions now. And with more athletic players, that leads to, more athletic events like stolen bases and hit and runs. A guy like Brandon Lau, Tampa just knows exactly where to put him. And he therefore is a very good second baseman. I don't think he's quite as effective.
Right.
He's going to be healthy. I don't think he's quite as effective without the extreme shifts that we're going to be able to do. So I do think it's not going to be that many. I mean, there's not that many Brandon Lau, types, but I think it will help the athleticism a bit on defense.
Yeah. It also helped batting average for left-handed power hitters, for instance, because those are the guys that get shifted against the most. They will have a few more singles. However, it does nothing to counteract strikeouts. And strikeouts are the biggest driver of low batting average. I mean, it's still 95-mile-an-hour sliders. It's still, the mound hasn't changed. The strike zone hasn't changed. that battle, the ball strikes battle, is still going to be the same.
I don't know about the same, because I think the people may, you know, put two with two strikes, you may just try to put the ball in play because there's more space for it to land.
Maybe.
The bottom line is still hitting the ball high and far is still the best outcome.
Yeah, so, I guess my problem with the whole concept is, why are we rewarding players that can't play?
Well, it's
theoretically, you know what I mean? Hit it where they ain't, and it's not a problem.
It's a fan thing. It's an enjoyment of the game sort of thing. You should be rewarded. You should play the game the way you score more runs or prevent more runs, right? You score more runs by not getting thrown out at trying to steal and not hitting running and not bunting. You prevent runs by putting fielders in the places where the ball's going to be. So, but that makes the game less aesthetically pleasing. There's precedent in other sports. In football, you can't, you know, you breathe in the quarterback and you're 15 yards. You know, the defensive backs, you know, they can't play as closely as, or, you know, hands as much as they used to. Basketball, defenses change, the lax about carrying and traveling. So they're, you know, hockey, clearing up the neutral zone with two-line pass, offsides, et cetera. So there's precedent in every sport for analogous changes to make the game more appealing, as opposed to lean it towards the better way to win.
True that. I also think you tie it into the pitch clock too, though, and I think the rights holders all want the games to speed up a little bit there too, right? And I think that's part of it. Honestly, I don't hear too many fans complaining about the length of games. I mean, no one complains about the length of a football game, and it's longer than a baseball game more often than not.
Yeah.
If I'm at a game, I want to have time to get that extra snack, to get that extra beer. Don't rush me. I don't know.
That's what baseball is all about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Seventh inning stretch. Yeah, you go grab yourself a dog and a beer. And
yeah, I'm not the ideal audience for this. So, you know, because
I think it's a rights holder thing. Click. I think the networks want quicker games. I think the broadcasters want and the beat writers want quicker games. I don't think it's the issue that the world is demanding. If there is a ratings issue in baseball, I don't think it's the pace of game. I don't really think it is, but I could be wrong. I mean, I think every rule, you know, I think baseball always tries to go to try to appeal for the fans that aren't their fans.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Simple, but good. Yeah. No, that's to the point.
Yeah. I don't know. That's just me. But so I do think, though, the pitch clock will change things a couple ways. I think it will maybe give pitchers a little less time to catch their breath when they're in a tight situation. They might be a little more tired. They might not think it through on their pitch a little as much. But the batter also is forced into that box too. So that kind of works both ways. I think, you know, it'll be on the extremes. Like Kenley Jansen's going to struggle with that perhaps. The guys that are quick pitchers to begin with, Luis Castillo is a guy that's a catch, throw, go. Let's go. Yeah. I don't think he's going to be bothered in the slightest about that.
Yeah, Craig Kimbrell with the pre-delivery arms up, that's going to be an issue. He's going to have to look at making some changes, I think.
Yeah, he's got other issues too.
Just a few.
Don't give up game-winning homers, for instance. Only three that he's allowed this year, but just it's fresh, so I had to make the joke.
Yeah, it hurts here as well.
Yep. Were there any other XFL rules that we didn't cover?
With the big debate, I mean, this isn't. It's less interesting maybe to people because they don't have to worry about this, but I think it's interesting. One of the things about the XFL is we're kind of working blind. We get a draft list that contains the available players, keepers are crossed out, listed by team and by position, and that's it. And it's done in November. So we don't have dollar values. We don't have RotoWire's draft software. and we don't even have, you know, to take it to the next step, there are some teams that have multiple managers. The second, the co-manager can't even be at the table. You know, Rick Wolf and Glenn Colton have this great, you know, one tracks, one bids. We can't even do that. They're not in the league. I'm just saying in general because everybody knows Glenn and Rick as a duo.
Right.
So what we're deciding is because we can whatever we want on the sheets during the draft. I mean, if you want to write down the prices you want to pay for closers, you can do that once the first player is put up a bid.
And we know our rot, and we know the keepers ahead of time. So it's not like we're going in blind knowing who the players are. So it's just having the time to do the research before you step to the draft table. That's basically it.
Some people want to be able to put limited information on these draft sheets previous. You know what? More important than the actual rule is, you know, we've been talking about the discussion and that we have a rule that we're bidding on, we're voting on. And I'm guilty of this. And I'm not putting my vote in for the rule. I'm offering alternatives to the rule as written, because I think voting on this rule, yes, no, isn't. I think we can find a better answer than yes, no. And so there's some people that's not what we're voting on. And some people are, you know, discussing to try to find from this discussion, from the rule vote, the best way to handle it. I think that's the more important topic for people listening is when you're doing these discussions, try to land on what's best for the league.
Sometimes that original proposal doesn't, you know, there are better ways to answer the question and to resolve a situation.
Right.
And I think that's what we're seeing with the XFL. And I know I'm guilty of it, tossing ideas out there that I think might solve the problem, but aren't part and parcel to the original question or rule change.
Right.
Yeah. The XFL is great for that. Everything, you know, thoughts and ideas accepted at will. And that's the way it should be as well in any league. Yeah, you've got to have the input of your members, don't you?
Yeah, when you guys vote in general, do you vote based upon what will help your team at that moment or what you think is for the greater good of the league? Because I think you can argue it can be made both ways.
Always the greater good of the league for me. Always. That's the way I play the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm always looking at the league and what does best for the sum of the whole rather than the parts.
Yeah, because you'll probably be in that situation later on. You're going to find yourself in that, on one part of the spectrum or another at some point in time. So trying to take a snapshot where you're at right now may not be the best thing. You know, same thing. You know, you get that. Applies to politics and executive power, for instance, there. You know, you may want that power because you're in office right now, but you may not always be in office. You may not want that power for someone else. So
I want the league to be around for 15 years.
I generally agree with you. I mean, I agree that I approach what's best for the league as well. Yeah. But I don't hold it against somebody if they go for their team route, except when they're in a trade veto. A trade should be judged on the trade. It shouldn't be judging how it hurts or helps you.
I don't think there should be trade vetoes for
that. Well, there is that.
I'm of the same mindset, Jeff.
Yeah. XFL has them, but in 20 years, Ron's never said, nope.
If you want to have a commissioner, a non-playing commissioner, veto powers, give them veto powers, sure, fine. But league vote, no way. It drags down a league.
We haven't had a war. We had one instance in Tout Wars in all the years, and that was a special instance. Which we cleaned up the next year with a rule change.
Right. But anyway. And it was only because of the particular rules in play and that we saw that, there was an unintended consequence of a rule. That's one thing we're going to find out. There is some unintended consequence for one of the rules that just got changed or implemented. And we'll have to adjust to that accordingly at some point in time.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, go ahead.
I was just going to say one of the keys for me in the traditional dynasty format, just taking a quick look at it, where you're dealing with a 23-man roster, 7-man reserve, 20 or 25-man minors, keep them all. I think one of the keys is right from the get-go, getting your constitution and rules down pat.
Mm-hmm.
And tweaking after the fact is fine, but man, you got to have things spelled out in black and white. And if you take care of that and do your homework in advance of that first draft that everybody's keen and we're going to be playing for 20 years, it gives you a chance to play for 20 years. So I just think it's very important that you build a strong base and a strong constitution that covers as much as possible and tweak it as you move forward. But hey, it's a lot of work running a dynasty league. And, sure is. And getting into one, I think everybody should be prepared for that amount of work right from the get-go.
Indeed. True words. And we'll close with that. That's some good stuff there. Todd, Tim, awesome stuff joining us today. Todd, we'll catch you tomorrow on Two Start Starters. And Tim, when do you do a lot of pods? When's the next one coming up for you?
We do a pod every Friday and every Sunday. So we do two a week at Prospect 361 over on Spreaker.
Awesome. We look forward to hearing it. All right. Thanks, everybody, guys. Thank you guys for listening. Good luck in your stretch runs. Take care.